100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by my buddy Chris Wiest. Chris is a Pennsylvania hunter and power lifter that works his butt off to find success in multiple states every year. We discuss the struggles this season, hunting low deer density areas, access difficulties, wind and thermals in particular areas, floating goals, bouncing back from low points, and much more. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday story of the week, we have a story coming from Seth Bent out of Maine. So Seth wrote in 2022, my wife and I went to the family camp in Maine for Thanksgiving week during the rifle season. My father-in-law had been up there for 2 days already hunting and scouting before we showed up on Sunday. He had found an area with some good deer sign, so we planned on hunting it Monday morning. The first morning hunt, my wife and I went in toward the top of the brook to hunt down each side of it. When we reached the brook, I crossed, and she kept on the same side. Not more than 100 yards down the edge, a track cut across, so I followed it down to the second brook, which it also crossed. I followed it up a short but steep bank on the other side where it met another good-looking track, but one went up to the brook while the other one headed down. As I was standing there trying to figure out which one I was going to take, a deer started blowing from up on the hill in front of me. I knew it must have heard me because the scent was getting pulled down the brook and away from the deer. So I took my grunt tube, did a few short grunts, broke a branch off a sapling in front of me, and raked the heck out of another tree, trying to sound as aggressive as possible. I ended with a couple of deep grunts, then took a knee and waited to see what could happen. To my disbelief, not more than a couple minutes went by, and I heard a crack of a branch to my left. I looked, and here comes a deer. He stopped at about 15 yards behind a jack spruce. We had a stare down for what felt like forever until he stepped out far enough I could put a good shot on him, which dropped him in his tracks. It was a total of 45 minutes of hunting on our first day in Maine after what had already been a very long, unsuccessful season up to that point. Another example of it can happen at any second. This was a 9-point that weighed 179 pounds. Congratulations, Seth. That is an absolute brute, and love the deer camp and Maine and tracking and going through and doing all that. That sounds like such a good time and an awesome deer. So thank you for sending that in. If you have a mountain buck success story that you want to send in for Mountain Buck Monday, all I need is a short paragraph or two and a few photos. Send it to my email, bodeastmeetswesthunt.com, and I'll get it scheduled to go out. Been getting a lot of submissions so far this year, and love getting them in. I really haven't even gotten to the 2023 ones yet, just still going through the backlog here. So be patient. They will go out. In other news, just been grinding it out, hunting like crazy. I'll share all the details on the season up to this point. We talk about it a little bit in this podcast, but I'll do a whole dedicated episode to it and kind of go through that. But for now, I appreciate everybody listening. If you like the episode, you enjoy it, please share it with your friends and give it a rating and review wherever you listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, anything like that. That all helps so much. So I appreciate it, and I hope everyone is having a good hunting season so far. Good luck. All right, we're live. Chris Wiest, welcome back to the podcast. It's been about 10, 11 months since I had you on last time, but a lot has changed since then.
Yeah, definitely. Glad to be here, man.
Yeah, well, no, I shouldn't say a lot has changed. I mean, it's the same thing, but I just mean there's been, even though it doesn't seem like that amount of time, there's been a lot of work being put in the tree and being able to do that. And at the time of recording this, we're kind of in the heat of the rut, and Chris had just killed a buck here yesterday was right on, so it's been Saturday, November 4th. Chris and I have been texting back and forth quite a bit, through the seasons and the highs and lows that kind of come with it. And I was like, man, I gotta get Chris back on to talk about this because, at the time of this going out, I'm sure there'll be, quite a few people that still have tags in their pocket and have been putting in a lot of work and just, that's kind of it. And I figured we'll kind of skip a lot of the backstory on Chris. If you want that, you can listen to the original podcast, but I'll just give you my Cliff Notes version on getting to know Chris, over the last year. Is he's a dude that just puts in an absolute a lot of work and passion in everything you do, which can come with a lot of really good things, and success can also drive yourself nuts when you get, so focused on that. Cause I know the feeling, believe me. And Chris just, seems to always be able to come through and get it done. But, so Chris, obviously you just killed a buck, but how's the season been going up to this point?
It was pretty slow. Don't see a lot. I think it was pretty calm in the mountains, but Yeah, it got pretty rough there for a while until it all everything changed in about 30 seconds, which is usually how it goes. But always happens when you least expect it, so you're always itching for that magic moment to happen.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I thought we were going to have to put out some sort of watch on you because I felt like, you know, Jason and I were talking. We're like, I don't know, Chris is getting, looks like he's getting a little bit, you know, wore out as far as just like, man, I've been hunting a lot and, you know, I'm not seeing many deer, and that's the nature of it. But, you know, you were putting in a lot of time, you know, all through really when did you start hunting? September?
September 8th was my first sit.
Yeah, so like for the last 2 months of freaking hard work, and the thing is, you know, you work second shift, so basically what you've been doing from the outside looking in, talking to you a little bit, is like you'll work until later on the night, and then you get up early and go out and sit in the tree or scouting during the mornings.
Yeah, when the season started in Maryland, I slept in my car for 3 weeks.
Did you really?
Yep. I would leave Monday morning, head down, hunt, and then go to work. And I mean, work's nice. There's showers and gym and stuff to work. So after my shift, I would just work out quick, get a shower, drive down to Maryland Public, and just lean the seat back and sleep for about 4.5 hours, 5 hours, whatever I could get. And hunt and just do it again, and I wouldn't be home till Saturday night.
Oh man, that's some dedication to it, and I like doing that over and over again. Is just like it gets tough from a sleeping standpoint. Like you just get wore out. How did you feel like you were dealing with it? Was it just a lot of caffeine, or did you have to take some breaks in there? What was your kind of process for dealing with that?
Oh, I always drink way too much caffeine. But, I wasn't too bad until probably like that last day or two towards the end of the week. But, yeah, I definitely got plenty of caffeine in me, and then I would just try to sleep in maybe Sunday morning or something like that just to get a morning to refresh, you know. Some weeks I didn't even do that. Some weeks I just pounded it out for 2.5 weeks straight without sleeping in. Eventually, I feel like I just got used to it. But
yeah, and you were trying and you didn't make it easier on yourself, because this year you were dead set with taking out a recurve, and it is a recurve, right? Well, not a longbow. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally up on the lingo of the traditional bows, I guess. But when I was down with you in August, we were at the Timber Ninja event, and all of you stick bow guys, if you want to call it, were out there shooting, and I'm like, man, you know, I have enough trouble with the compound. It just that seems like a tough add to be able to throw onto it.
Hey man, Nathan was showing me how to do it.
Yeah, I know. I give him, you know, we were talking about that, so much respect that, you know, Nathan Killen, like the fact that he gets it done every year and he's, you know, using traditional equipment, like that is pretty awesome.
100%, dude. I try not to be like a suck up to anybody, but I will freely speak about how much respect I have for that man. And because I know him on like a personal level now with everybody, and we talk a lot and stuff, and just, dude, he, so much respect for that guy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's
a hard worker. Hard worker and such a nice person in general, just like super humble, super kind, and just, yeah, totally agree. But so talk a little bit about like your experiences you were going through the season. What do you think what were your biggest struggles? Was it, you know, you said you weren't seeing many deer, but do you think like if you were to analyze it at this point, maybe you haven't a lot yet, but like where do you think some of your struggles were coming from, or what do you think that, you know, could have done a little bit different?
Honestly, I think it's just the low deer density, you know, in the mountain ground that that comes along with that. Because, man, I really feel like my access was, like, fairly good all season. I mean, it's not perfect every time, obviously. Everybody makes mistakes. There's times where I walked in, I'm like, man, I shouldn't have come in this way. I should have come in a different way. The wind's not blowing the right way. All those little details. But I think my setups were solid. My access has been decent. It's just been either low deer density or, like, weather-related. You know what I mean? It might be – because I hunted straight through whether it was cold or warm, no matter what. Like, it's – to me, it's like the deer are there. They're not going anywhere. If it's warm out, they don't leave and go on vacation. You know what I mean? They're there. They're going to move every single day, no matter what. So I feel like I need to be in the woods all the time. That's how I am, too, because I feel like if I sleep in or miss a day, I, like, basically give up my whole opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's it's funny. That's kind of how I've been feeling now during the rut here, where it's like anything can happen at any time, and it's like I have other things that I need to be doing, you know, in my life, and you know, jokingly, like, I don't have, like, everyone thinks that, you know, now that I do the podcast and everything full time, it's like, oh, you hunt for a living. And it's like, not exactly, like, yeah, that looks like that, but yeah. Actually, like, producing this stuff and sitting behind the computer is what actually makes the money. So I got to still find time for that. And so it's been just like, I've been terrible with, like, getting back to anybody, or, like, just, I feel like my phone's full of messages and everything, because I just, like, when I'm out there hunting, trying to take advantage of the daylight, and then working at night, and then trying to get some sleep in the middle of it, and family time, and all those different things, and trying to balance all of it is not a simple thing. And, you know, you've been doing it for, you know, 2 months. Where for me, I knew that, like, November was going to be kind of a grind. So in October, when I got back from Alaska and South Dakota, I kind of took it easy there at first and was just like, all right, try to get all your other priorities figured out, and then, you know, go full bore once it gets a little bit closer to the rut time. But it's not simple to be able to, or not easy to be able to put in that kind of time, you know, especially with you, you know. And it's like, for me, I'm lucky from the standpoint of where I can be flexible with my work hours and, like, be able to, you know, change it and do whatever. You know, if someone's going to get mad, it's the guy in the mirror, from that standpoint, you know, not necessarily having a boss. But, you know, for you, you've been having to go in like most people from a certain time till a certain time, mm-hmm. and then get out. And I mean, that's what I, you know, did for years until last year. But it's that can wear on you, and it can start to wear on you, you know, even mentally, and especially hunting the places like you do and like I do, and a lot of the listeners, you know, big woods and mountains and whatever. Like, it's low deer density is hard, and it starts to wear on your mind. Like, no matter how much, I don't care how good you think you are, you can wear, I mean, it's going to humble you no matter what. Like, it's not simple. It's not easy to be able to get on deer in these places. And it really does take time. Now, everyone can get, you know, quote unquote lucky, you know, early to be able to have that happen. But a lot of times, for me at least, most seasons are an absolute grind.
Yeah, I feel that really hard this year too, because, you know, I put probably more time into scouting, running cameras, and learning a whole brand new piece of public ground this year than I ever have. And I really thought that I was, like, on top of it. I'm like, damn, like, I'm going to get in there. Sometime in October, I'm going to have a chance at one of these bucks. I'm going to, like, shoot one within, like, the first couple of weeks. Man, was that as far from the truth as it could have been.
Yeah.
I had probably, like, five, like, exceptional deer on one piece of ground on camera over the summer. And I'm like, oh, man, like, at least, like, two or three of these things are going to stay on that piece of ground. They're not going to move out. And I'm going to have, you know, if you have four or five deer, that's four or five times the chance you have of seeing one. Only one big one stayed. And all the other ones moved out. And I was chasing that deer's tail, I mean, since September, running cameras. That's not the deer that I shot, but there's a big one in there I was after. I had that thing on nine different trail cameras over a mile stretch, just making a giant oval shape. but he had no pattern to like what he was doing. There's like no rhyme or reason. I just, especially now, man, like November, he's going to be checking dough groups all over that piece. I'm not that upset that I shot a different year.
Yeah, no, I can understand that, because I'm kind of in the same boat where there's one deer that I'm like really focused on. Now I'll shoot other deer like you did, but like I always try to focus on one deer, and then if another one I want to shoot comes by, then I'll shoot them, and I'm perfectly happy with that. But it just like gives me focus when I have, you know, one that I'm trying to figure out, or you know, get, you know, it just gives me like kind of a purpose to what I'm doing. And it, you know, here recently, this past week, so this first week of end of October, first week in November, or even in the, you know, the last week in October there, I've had the best year that I've had in a long time, as far as action, as far as sightings, as far as all that stuff. Yeah. I've never drawn my bow back yet, but you know, all that to be said, it's just like trying to get eyes on, you know, that single deer, which I did on Halloween. And but it's so hard. And now we're getting into November. Now, you know, there's a good chance that he's going to be on his feet moving around a little bit more. But where, you know, it's like towards the end of October, I felt like I was, you know, like this close where, you know, he was showing up on camera about within an hour of daylight. He did come in daylight a couple of times after when I pulled the card, and I just like, I'd get in there, and I think he came out one night like around October 23rd right at dark, and I ended up sitting in the tree for an hour and a half after dark because I knew I could hear him working to scrape. I don't know if it was him. It could have been a spike for all I know, but I'm going to say it was him. And, you know, like working to scrape. Yeah, you get that gut feeling. It just seemed, and it was like, you know, coming close to that full moon time, and I could see like, you know, shadow of the body way out there about 80 yards out. There was another scrape, and you know, and I'm just like, you know, it's got to be him. You know, I'm sitting in the tree just waiting. I eventually had to make some coyote howls and sounds to try to get him spooked off to not, you know, so I could climb down and get out of there essentially, and you know, not spook him. And the funny thing was, we were talking about access and like, you know, thinking that you're getting clean and you know, you try really hard to do that. Well, coming out that night was not good for me. So I was like, all right, I saw which direction he went, and I was like, that was my normal way out. And I'm like, all right, so I got to do something different. I looked at Spartan Forge. I'm like, all right, I can go up the edge. It was like a herbicide sprayed clear cut. So there's just trees, you know, down all over and tops. And, you know, it's kind of hard to navigate through in the dark. And even with maps, like, you know where you need to go, but how to get there. And this was like a very flat area. And this deer lives in an area that's extremely flat. And I hate hunting those areas, but that's just where he lives at. And there's not much terrain. I can get turned around pretty quick in those types of areas when everything looks the same and it's all the sprayed, you know, cuts. Well, apparently I took the wrong logging road and then ended up in like this beach brush, just like thick, nasty hole. And I got spun around and was just like, I remember like I looked at my map and I'm like, I just went right into where I think he was bedding at. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I'm, you know, so mad at myself. And my cousin Mason had texted me at the time and said something about, he had watched my recent video. He's like, oh, I really liked that video. The quest for the 3-year quest or whatever. And I was like, well, I'm on a quest right now trying to find my truck. And, well then I lost service and I get back to my truck like an hour later, and there was a couple messages like, do you have a map? And then the next one was like, do you need help? Because I was, you know, he thought I was lost at that point. I'm like, no, I was just screwing everything up, you know, walking through the area that I shouldn't have been. And that's just like those types of things happen. You know, I was with Johnny today and he was talking about like feeling like he was close on a couple of deer, but then like he'd be noisy or something would happen. He's like, then I lost all my confidence. You know, I was hanging my set and I banged something together or did whatever. And he's just like, dang it. You know, it's just, that's, that's kind of the nature of it.
Oh, dude, you're not wrong. All that stuff happens to everybody though. Like yesterday morning, walking in, dead silent, 35 degrees and crisp. And it just sounded like a freight train walking through the woods. And when it's like that, I know that there's absolutely nothing that I can do about it. And I don't try to run, but I try to get to where I'm going. That way it's just done and over with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the, it doesn't matter how fast or how slow you walk in 4 inches of crunchy leaves. There's no being quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially on like a frosty morning like that, it makes it even, yep. You know, 10 times worse when you're going through. It's like, all right, might as well do it. And I don't know if you've climbed many cherry trees, but like their bark is just like,
yep.
Is the loudest tree out there. And sometimes that's the only tree I can get in, and I hate it because it's just like, you're going up, it's like, you know, no matter your pants brush against it, you know, your sticks, everything. Mm-hmm. That's just like, no matter what, you could touch it with your fingernail and it seems like it makes a noise so loud that just spooks everything off. And I'm just like, all right, at this point, just get in, get set, and then let it die down. You know, just be quiet, be still.
Yep. Sometimes that's all you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's funny though, because like, I mean, I know even myself, it helps, you know, talking to people like you and talking to people like Johnny and my dad and all these people that, you know, I think are really good hunters. And then like hearing that everyone goes through it. Cause like, even, you know, when you're in your own little bubble and you're trying and you're working so hard, you've done all this scouting, you're doing all this stuff, and you have X amount of time to go in there and you screw things up, you just feel like the biggest idiot in the world. Like, it's just like, what am I doing? Like, I'm just messing this up. And it's just, yep. And it's a mind. It messes with your mind pretty good.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think everybody deals with that stuff too, but you're looking at the guy that gets the most frustrated. All that stuff happened, dude. I always tell like my friends and stuff, I'm that guy that you could probably like smack in the face, and I'll probably like look at you and just laugh at you. But if the most minute thing goes wrong, that's an inconvenience to me, that I'm trying to do something important, it just fires me up like right now. So all that little stuff, like I'm trying to hang a stand and I like ting something and it like makes a loud noise or something, I drop something, dude, I'm fired up. I just love that everything like according to plan.
Yeah, no, I hear you there, man. And it's just like, it feels like no matter what, every season you go through these things and these things happen or just whatever, or like the wind shifting is like, that's something that seems to happen every time I'm in the tree, where it's just like, what do you mean? Like this, you know, I thought I had this calculated perfect. I thought the thermals were going to do this. I thought the wind was going to do that. And it's just like, nope, we're going to do the complete opposite. And we're going to have a gust that goes right in where, yep, you think that these deer are bedded at, or, and I've kind of come to the, like, for me, when I'm sitting in a tree, it's just like, I understand there's going to be some shifts that happen. And especially during the rut, I don't worry about it as much. It's like deer can come from absolute anywhere. And like out when I saw 12 bucks this last week, which is, like I said, was, I think we were talking about it beforehand, was incredible. Like, I hadn't seen that many deer in a week, and I can't tell you how long, but really none of them came, only one of them came from the direct, like the way I thought they were going to. You know, my camera was sitting there, I had a camera on a scrape, and one day I saw 6 bucks and not one of them went in front of that camera and hit that scrape. You know, one was downwind of it a little bit. Other ones were just, you know, once a hot doe went running out through there, then it was all on. There was a couple bucks that were like, looked like they were shed hunting. They were just grid searching back and forth, trying to catch her scent, you know, just running back and forth, yeah, grunting, doing that stuff. And it's just like, you know, this time of year, it's really up in the air what's going to happen. And so at that point, I don't worry about it as much. Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade Short Barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Yeah, I have definitely been playing with the wind a lot this year, especially in a new area like that and figuring out how the air currents actually work once you're in the tree for especially an extended period of time, how your thermals change and like that. I feel like unless it's going to be gusty from like daylight till dark, when your thermals are pulling in the morning when it's calm, it's really repeatable about 9:30. Between 9:15 and 9:30 is when the day winds pick up here or in that spot. So it's even like those little things to take notes on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's actually the spot where I killed my buck. It was a west-facing slope with laurel on it, no bedding on the top. It was a little bit thicker on the lower side of the hill, but there was a trail coming out the side that the does were using too. And there's a nice pinch there. There's a blow down on the low side and a rock pile on the upper side, a fresh rub in the middle. And I sat actually a lot lower than that the Friday morning, and I seen those does work through that gap. And I just had a gut feeling. I was like, man, like I feel like I just need to be a little further up the hill. I got up there, I found that spot, set up, and that buck come right through that gap Saturday morning. But I had actually planned on, so I know on that west-facing slope, and when it's cold, you get like a north pole too. So it was coming downhill hard when he come through, but I knew at 10 o'clock the wind was going to shift and start blowing uphill, you know, towards the direction the deer were going to come from. And I was going to sit all day that day, but I didn't have a second stand that wasn't far from me. And I was going to ride out Saturday and see how it went. But I actually had an idea. I thought I was going to actually hang a set above the trail too. And then sit in the stand until about 10. And as soon as the wind shifts, I was going to run down the tree and run across the trail in like one specific spot and get up the tree on the other side. So my wind was still good. And then you just have to shoot either side of the tree before the deer hits your boot tracks.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And, you know, I was on, I think it was Thursday or Friday morning. I sat in a spot I hadn't sat in before, and I honestly didn't, I know better, like depending on the slope, as far as when the thermals are going to change. But I was like, I want to get, there was four or five logging trails that intersected at this spot. And I found it, I was using LIDAR, on Spartan Forge to, because I was sitting in this bottom, I was in this hub, and it was really like, I was having some action down there. And it was good, but the wind speeds were going to be high that on Friday. And I was like, I can't get away with that down in this bottom at that point. Like even sitting on the stream, like my thermals aren't going to pull down. That wind's going to overtake it. So I was like, I need to get up higher. And I was trying to think of like, all right, where are these deer going to be coming from? And I was like, I've scouted this side hill before, but not great. And it was kind of one of those things that I found a buck in the middle of the season and kind of just, you know, adjusted and, you know, went there. So I was like, all right, found logging trails on the map. I'm like, I'm going to go in there, but I want to get, it was a steep, side hill, and I was like, I want to get above these trails, but I need to wait really for the thermals to switch to be able to do that. But I also thought it was kind of a cruising spot in between where I thought there was a clear cut on the top, and I figured some does were hanging out there, and there was a southwest wind coming across, and it was just like, okay, I can get to that point, and I think this is where some deer are going to cruise. But I went in there just a little bit after daylight, and I didn't have a tree picked or anything. So I was just kind of like sneaking through, planning for some more midday type movement. But forgetting that it was a north slope, it took until about 11 a.m. for those thermals to switch and start going up. And then in the afternoon, the wind speed was so high, it took over, and thermals really didn't play again until like there was some calm periods, and then it would, mm-hmm. you know, I was throwing milkweed, and it was funny watching the differences of how it was working through there. And I did end up having a buck come up from the lower end of the logging trail, went right past me at 8 yards, and which that was pretty cool to see that, you know, kind of work from blindly planning on the map. But it just reminded me again, as far as like how every spot is so different with wind, with thermals, all of that stuff. And a lot of it, you kind of do have to figure out in the fly. Like I try to plan, especially when I find good spots, I try to like look at that stuff and be like, all right, you know, I'll put it in the notes when I mark the pin. Like, I think the thermals are going to switch around this time, you know, whatever. But, you know, you'll get these, you know, like this past week, we had, at least where I was at, had a lot of southwest winds. And then, you know, some days were higher wind speeds than others. And you just kind of got to look at the conditions, you know, even the night before, because they're always changing, and then make a decision based off of that. And if you're in a new spot, you're gonna mess up, and that's the nature of it. And but you take those notes down and remember it for next time, hopefully that it's, you know, something that's repeatable.
Yeah, definitely. Have you ever take note of at what wind speed that the thermal stop?
So this is also something I feel like depends on, I think the vegetation depends on this a little bit too, whether it's thicker vegetation that kind of blocks the wind a little bit, like hemlock stuff doesn't mm-hmm. seem to be, you can have higher wind speeds and it still work with the thermal stuff. But normally it seems like over 7 or 8 miles an hour, you start getting some mixture and some swirling, because you know when some of those gusts come through that are over 10 miles an hour, it seems like that overpowers the thermals. Depending on the other thing is depending on the size of the hill. You know, if you get some like really big mountains, I feel like you can get even higher wind speeds depending on where you're at in the hill, and you'll still have a thermal pull. Whereas if you get something that's like 300-400 foot of elevation gain, that's in between not a whole lot, that seems to, you know, lower wind speeds can impact that. Have you looked at that at all?
No, that'd be interesting to try to start taking notes on. For me, basically, I'll just look at my phone or one of my apps. If it says that it's going to be like 5 mile an hour and under, then I'm automatically taking thermals. Like I'm playing thermals 100%. And then if it's like 7 mile an hour plus, that I'm probably going to set up for when that wind picks up.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. And like it, cause you can't, especially if you're trying to sit all day, or like you know, with you work and you know, you're basically trying to hunt till what time are you able to hunt till?
Usually about 10:30, 11 o'clock, something like that.
Yeah. So you're trying to figure out what it's going to do, you know, in that window that you have available. But when you're hunting, if you're hunting all day during the rut, it's like, I've always just looked at it as, I understand there's going to be times my wind isn't good, you know, exactly what I want, but I'm trying to figure out when I think the deer could potentially come through. So there's some spots I'm getting in there early and being like, okay, my wind's really not great, because the thermals are falling for the first few hours or whatever, and I'm above the trail, and I'm going to have to shoot them before they get there if that's the case. But I know, you know, when they may be cruising from different doe bedding area to doe bedding area, that in the middle of the day that my wind should be pretty good. So, like, I try to look at that mm-hmm. when I'm planning out my sits, and to be able to, to do it. And I felt like this past week has been pretty good. Like I said, there was still a lot of swirling that was going on at times, but for the most part, it was pretty predictable. And I play with things of like, I know it's going to be risky, but I kind of want to just see if I can get away with it and do it. And that's how you learn.
I don't know if it was Wednesday or Thursday here. It was really, really windy. Might have been Wednesday. No, it was Thursday. Yeah. I went in and I was hunting this scrape that I had a buck coming into. It was the only pattern of a buck I've had all year long. He had a pattern where every time that we had a cold snap, he showed up in daylight. And this was the third cold snap that we were going to get was this past week here. And I set up on it days before that just to make sure. I sat on the scrape for 5 days. And I knew he was going to show up eventually. Well, we had that one gusty wind day, and I'm like, well, if I don't go sit there, he's going to show up. So I'm going to, like, if it a little bit and see what happens. And I never seen the deer. Well, Thursday, when I left that spot to go set up on the west-facing slope, I had a camera on the edge of a bluff that I had to cross. And it was like 100 yards off the side of this scrape. And what you know it, I know exactly what happened. That sucker caught my wind and he skirted me and still went to where he wanted to go. Instead of coming in the scrape, I caught him on camera skirting me. Yep.
Oh my. Yeah, again, it's now something that makes you overthink it and just like go through that.
How many times do you think that actually happens though? And people don't know it. And I just happen to catch that deer on camera doing it.
Oh, I'm sure it happens. Yeah. I'm sure it happens quite a few times. And that's just, you know, it's like always, I always laugh at like, you know, when guys are like, they feel like they have a buck that's patternable. I don't, you know, say farm country or where even in the big woods, if there's something they felt like was on a pattern, it's like every time that I'm not there, the deer shows up. And it's like, well, I would think that, you know, that might be a thought that there's something going on that he knows you're there.
He knows you're coming.
Yep.
Yep. He's got your routine.
And you know, like throughout the season too, Chase, when you're trying to like focus on, you know, one or two bucks, it can be such a mentally draining, you know, thing. So this past week, again, just kind of thinking about that, was we spent the first 3 days in one tree. I had a camera guy with me, Matt, and he came out. We hunted the same tree for 3 days straight. One and a half of those days were fire. The rest was completely dead. And ended up moving to a different area, and just completely different area. And went and hunted for about a day and a half, and I was going to go into this spot again, and I was going to go down in that creek bottom when the winds died down that I was telling you about, and there's big hub scrape down there. It's freaking great, and it funnels deer crossing from each valley to valley. And I was up at camp, and I was telling my dad and my uncles and my cousin, and all, and I'm just talking about it, and I'm like, yeah, I think that's where I'm going to go in the morning. They're like, well, what about that big deer you were hunting? And I'm like, well, he's, you know, and I think it was actually after you and I were talking, and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to go hunt and just not worry about him for a few days. And they're like, no, you got to go after that deer again. So like, I have this in my head, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go, you know, after this big deer again. I go sit there, and this is the bad thing about cell cameras. I had a cell camera at that scrape. And what do you know? A nice 10-point shows up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, just standing there at 17 yards at the scrape. Yep. The wind was perfect for that spot, and it was low wind speed that day, and I knew my thermals would be dumping right into that water. Like, it would have been perfect. And I'm just like, all right, well, hopefully this is hopefully it's just going to all work itself out. And, there's a reason for, you know, chasing after this one deer, but we'll
Sounds
see.
Like I, if there's one all there.
I, you I know, and I did text. Listen, I texted all of them in a group message a picture of it, and I said, "This is your fault." You know, I was like, "This is your guys' fault." And their response was, "Ah, he's not big enough, anyways. Keep hunting." You know, I was like, "Oh,
your dad's just one Boone Crockett, and that's what he has to say."
Yeah, no. Now he's just talking shit. But yeah. No, they were just, you know, joking with me there, but I don't know. I have this constant like back and forth on hunting a deer and versus just hunting and like enjoying the process of going to areas I want to go to and hunt. And you and I were texting back and forth on it, and I feel the more all of us as, you know, as hunters, you know, rely on, you know, trail cameras and things like that, you start seeing what's out there and you start getting obsessed on it. And I feel like with myself, I always have this, like this moment, and it happens. It seems like every year where I have this like mental check of like, all right, is this what I want to do? Is this worth it for me to focus on this deer? Or at this point, do I want to, you know, just have fun? And it's not like I'm not having fun chasing a specific deer, but it can be really frustrating at times. So like it's this mm-hmm. this constant battle back and forth. And you know, you and I were texting about that just a couple days really before you ended up, you know, shooting a beautiful buck, but it wasn't the one that you were particularly hunting in there. And what are your thoughts after you had shot that deer? Like how do you feel about it?
Oh man, there's so many different ways to look at it though, because of how it happened too. I mean, you talked about that. You just want me to lay that out?
Yeah, explain it.
So the whole traditional thing, dude, I love that, but I love shooting the traditional bow for real. Like we could have not even had this conversation and or nothing, and I just the traditional bow is I love it, everything about it. But I was having some shooting issues in the last like couple of weeks, and then I had shot two bucks in Maryland actually, and didn't recover either those deer. Those deer made it because of the hit, but I backstrapped one and I hit one in the shoulder, and that was really frustrating, obviously, because obviously, you know, if you had a calm down in your hands, there's a bit. Two dead deer in my eyes because they were so close. And I did shoot a doe here in PA, made a really good shot on her, so that was cool. Gave me a boost of confidence there. And but like on target, even I was having, I don't know if it's target panic or what was going on, I just had something mentally going on. And I had a doe come in last Thursday, and she come in like I think I could have smoked her. She come in like 8 yards, but she would not turn. She just refused to turn, and she come right to the base of my tree. And, well, I mean, she seen the step and just went,
oh. Looked right up at you.
Yeah, she turned around, jogged out like 15 yards broadside. But, dude, I wasn't like jacked up or nothing. I'm like, I'm going to shoot this doe. I'm going to take my time, talk myself through it, get some confidence back. And man, I pulled back, stared down, shot, just completely missed her. And I'm like, dude, I don't know what happened. But at that point, because I was hunting that buck, but I was in a spot where I was like, if I could shoot a doe in here, like I could get her out no problem. And I was like, what's going to happen if I have this big deer that I'm hunting come in? And now I'm thinking to myself, I really don't have much confidence after I dismissed that doe at 15 yards. Like in the back of my head, I was kind of afraid that I would like gut shoot that big deer or just wound him in general. So I talked to Ryan Glitzky, a couple other guys about it. And, you know, they said there's no shame, you know, in picking up the compound if I don't have any confidence left. And that's where it comes into where I was like, there's two different ways to look at it for me after what happened, because I ended up shooting a buck at the compound. I took the compound out one sit, and like I told you, I was in the tree for 20 minutes, and that deer comes to 10 yards, and I kill it. So, you know, I'm super happy with the deer, because for me, personally, after this, the long season I've had, is an awesome buck. He's a good 3-year-old deer, mountain deer, everything. The whole morning was perfect. The orange sunrise, turkeys were gobbling. I was chilling in the tree, drinking coffee after the shot. Like, it was the perfect morning that you wait for all year long. So I'm 100% super happy with that deer. But on the other side, it's like, man, if I would have just stuck it out, you know, that deer come to 10 yards, would have everything been different? And I'm trying not to talk in circles, but me and you had talked about the whole social media thing and how that, like, steers your season if you get too attached to what other people think. And I'm like, man, I feel like I'm going to get so much hate because I just, you know, all summer long, yeah, I had done other podcasts and stuff. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm shooting the trad though and everything, which it was. I hunted 66 days in a tree with the recurve. And it wasn't because I felt pressured how to do it. It's because I just loved to do it. But then I got so frustrated, I hung it up and took the wheels out and shot one. And I'm like, oh, man, now what are people going to think? But honestly, dude, like, after the fact and, like, we talked and, like, talked to my dad and stuff, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like I'm done with the recurve or nothing. Like, I got my confidence up. Like, I'm still going to shoot my recurve. And I'm going to kill a big one with the recurve. Like, it's going to happen. Eventually, it's going to happen. But I think, like, the moral of the story, like, you can't care what everybody else thinks of your hunt. Because if you base your hunt on what everybody else thinks, you're probably not going to have that great of a time. Because you're constantly going to be worried about everybody else's opinion. And, dude, I went in there and I had the most perfect morning I could have ever asked for. So I'm super happy with that whole experience, no matter what.
Yeah, dude, like I told you, and it's easier said than done being on the outside than the person that's, you know, in it. But I didn't look at, you know, because you in outside, you know, taking what other people think out of it. You know, I know how you are and you're driven and like you really wanted to shoot a nice buck with the recurve. And like, that's what you wanted. And that's your, you know, personal goals of being able to do it. At the same time, it's like, that doesn't mean like, I didn't look at that as a failure and you quit, you know, it's just part of the process of like, okay, I actually think I respect you more from the standpoint of being able to be like, you know what? I don't have the confidence in it. I've had a couple of bad, you know, shots with it and being like, and being able to recognize that and like let your ego aside and be like, I'm going to pick up the compound that I feel confident in shooting right now and do that and just keep working at it. And then I'll be back with the trad bow. And like, and even if you were decided like it wasn't for you, it's like, that's, and I know that's not the case at this point, but
the Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
You don't know until you try something and you go through it and you do it and but like the pressures of like outside things, there's a couple of things. Like I think overall, like, social media is a positive thing for me personally. I've met some awesome people on there. I love seeing it and people having success. But when you're starting to have a down season or you're starting to struggle, you're doing anything and you start seeing everybody's successes, obviously you're happy for them. But at the same time, it internally, you're like, man, I suck. And you start like kind of, or you see like, you know, these giant deer going down. It's like a deer that you would normally be happy with. You start like questioning like, oh, you know, is this what I should be shooting? And it's like,
you know, and again, easier said than done, but it's like, who cares? Like, what is, you know, are any of those people going to be at your funeral? And even if they are, I mean, you're dead anyways at that point, like everyone's going to die. So why does it matter? Like do what makes you happy and be able to feel it. And, you know, I'm talking to myself just as much as I'm saying this. And like, I've always tried to, you know, throwing that I have the podcast and all this stuff out the window, like I've always just personally tried to continually like get better at things and, you know, increase it and, you know, shoot bigger bucks and do all that, you know, but there's also the part of me that learns that has learned that this is a lifetime of working towards something. You can't really expect every year to just keep stepping up. Sometimes it's like, okay, you know, you step up, you have a, you know, a good year and you stay on, and sometimes you drop down a little bit and then you come back up, and it's just like, you just continually working at it. And for me, like that's why I have what I call a variable scale on what I want to shoot, like from a buck size standpoint or maturity or whatever you want to look at. You know, I'm not a person that says that, oh, I'm going to shoot, like if I'm going to shoot on the first day, I'm going to shoot on the last day, you know, I'm not going to pass on certain bucks and then shoot them later in the season. That's complete opposite for me. Like I will pass on bucks earlier in the season and shoot them later because I want to at that standpoint. Like that's just the way for me. And I know I have some really good friends that are the complete opposite, and I respect the way they look at it too. But you know, there was one buck, I think I was telling you, that it was right after I just got done seeing the big one I was hunting. And then this nice buck, mature buck, came out at 33 yards, I believe. And just, I second guessed it for just enough time that I didn't have an opportunity if I wanted to at that point, but I had it for like, you know, a 5 to 7 second window that he was there, bows in hand, and I'm just looking at him and I'm like, I don't know. And then, you know, as he started walking off, I'm like, he went behind this tree, I'm like, I think I'm gonna shoot him. And at that point it was too late, and it was like, all right, I either got to make a decision, you know, when they come out and you know, own it and be happy with it or not. And then I don't regret it. That's just kind of the process that goes through your head. And especially when you're trying to chase big deer and get to know it. And, you know, I've always tried to steer away from saying like, oh, you know, everyone always thinks that the place they hunt is the hardest place to hunt. You know, like you talk to anybody, no matter what state, it's like, oh, if you came where I'm at, you know, it's pretty tough. But I really do think, like, you know, hunting some of the big woods and mountains in the Appalachian Mountain region, Pennsylvania and the other states around here is really difficult. And it's tough to be able to do that, even if you do have a lot of time to be able to spend it doing it, you know, just because, you know, you or I work all season, working our butts off to hunt one deer, we're not guaranteed that. Nobody is. Like, and you can do everything right and you're still not guaranteed it. And that's the beauty of hunting, I guess.
Yep. No doubt. Yeah. It's tough, man. I was probably like 50 couple sets in, and I'm setting myself thinking, maybe I should hunt some farm country next year. At one point, I actually went over here to a piece of private ground one evening just to sit so I could see some deer. Like, I think I seen 7 deer. Yeah, I seen 7 deer coming to a green field. I'm like, oh my God, that's what a deer looks like.
Yeah. Oh no, that's exactly right. Now, I've also learned that too, and I've talked about it with my family and friends and stuff. It's like, I love doing the challenging hard hunts that, like, you might not see some things, but I'd really like to start sprinkling in some things that are like just going out and shoot a little something, more, you know? yeah, because I do like seeing deer, and it's like, especially when you're hunting like specific deer, they don't really do a lot of what other deer are, so you're not gonna see a lot of deer in those places. Especially, I every year I see it and it's just a constant reminder. But like even during the rut, you know, sometimes you'll get a big one that comes out into the open and it's good, but they like to skirt inside that cover. Like even, and it's hard to be able to do that. Like I was just hunting this clear cut edge. There was actually three different clear cuts that met. And then there was like a strip of woods and I was like right in this corner. It was a perfect rut funnel. But to the thicker beech brush is like where those big bucks stay mm-hmm. to run. And there's just, you can't cut it out. Like you can't sit there and cut shooting lanes on public. So it's just like, all right, what, you know, you're trying to hit these gaps and find these stuff. And, you know, obviously the spikes and the 4 points, they're just out there just chilling in the wide open, you know, doing their thing. But those older bucks just don't do that. And it's don't do that very often. And it's hard to get those opportunities at them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I like to kind of like set apart the age class in the deer I'm hunting. So like that big one that I was after, I'm actually having a hard time putting an age on that deer. I'll have to send you some pictures because I have a couple pictures where he just looks like a stone 5 year old, big, thick neck. And then like I have pictures off another camera and he looks like he's three. And I feel like that's, don't even get me started on the trail camera debate that I have from this season, dude. Oh man. they can look 10 times the size that they really are, and they can look way smaller than they really are, just depending on what camera you're getting the pictures off of. And I've learned that because I run at least 10, 15 different trail cameras. Like I don't have one of the same. And I'll get pictures of the same deer on 9 cameras this year, and he looks different on every one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I'm so bad at like judging too, like off of the trail cameras. Like there'll be some, like you said, there'll be angles or, and even sometimes on the same exact camera that he'll look different in two different, yep. you know, situations where one, he's like, oh my gosh, that's the giant, you know, that's 160 inch deer. And then you see him again. It's like, oh, that's, is he 130? Like maybe not that big of a scale difference, but you know what I mean? Like you get these different angles and it's tough, but
well, the buck that I did shoot, I had that buck on camera all summer and never even in the back of my mind did I think I would shoot that deer. And then I see him in person. That deer was way bigger in person than what I thought he was. Like he did not look that big on camera at all. I promise you that.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful deer. And it's funny because I have such a hard time field judging, like even in person to be able to do that. So we saw this buck yesterday about 5 o'clock in the evening. He's coming down the edge of the clear cut. And I'm like, oh man, he's coming. We're right at the corner. Like he's coming down the edge. It's perfect. And I'm looking, I'm like, holy cow, that's a 10 point. And I look at Matt and he's filming. I'm like, is that 10 points? Like, it's a big 10. I'm like, it's the big 10, you know? And I'm like, and all of a sudden I went through these stages and I've identified what this deer is. And he ended up cutting underneath one of my other trees about 70 yards out that I've hunted out of, and went out and I couldn't call him back in. He was just kind of on a mission, and went back and reviewed the footage. And it was a nice 8 point, but it wasn't this giant 10 that I thought he was, you know, coming. And it's like, you start getting these, you play these tricks in your mind and be, and like, sometimes I overestimate. And then there's sometimes that I underestimate what they are. And at the time, and I always laugh at the story my dad has of, he's got these years and years of sheds off this one buck that was from like 10 years ago. And he was just a giant deer. And he always laughs because I shot that deer 3 times. And everybody looks at him like, what do you mean you shot him 3 times? Like you wounded him? He's like, no, I shot the wrong deer 3 times thinking that it was him. Like that, like, you know, other bucks that had similar frames that were younger or different. Like, he's like, I've shot that deer 3 times, but I've never actually killed him because they were always different deer. And I like my dad's mentality, and I've kind of taken it a little bit more where his whole thought process, like with what deer he's going to shoot, really comes down to a lot of times of like, what is that experience up to that point? You know, is it something you called in, or is it something that you set up close to, you know, a bedding area, and your goal is to shoot one like that? And like, it's all about like kind of what the whole experience is to make that decision, and does it get your heart pumping and make you, you know, and I think that's a really good way of looking at it versus just inches or age or whatever that comes down to.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes it's super hard to judge a suit, like especially when the deer's coming in and it happens quick, your judgment goes like way out the window. You have that split second to make up your mind that it's over.
Yeah, because you can't sit there and stare at the antlers. Otherwise, you miss your opportunity. And in the places that we hunt, it's like I've heard Jeff Sturgis say it before about hunting in the timber. And some of it is with him and farm country, but he does hunt some big woods too. But he says you really have 7 seconds from the time you see a deer to shoot it most of the time. That's what he kind of figured out. And I would even argue that sometimes that average might be less, you know, where it, all of us, especially you get, you know, a windy day or the leaves are wet and you can't hear him. And then all of a sudden he comes out of this thick cover and it's like right now, like you have a decision to make to be able to do it.
I would say I probably killed that buck in 5 seconds. Cause I mean, yeah. I told you before we started the podcast, like I just picked up the bow and was just making sure that everything was ready. I mean, it just got light. You know, I mean, it was 7:30. I pick up the bow. I like draw it back and I'm like looking to make sure everything's good. I leave the bow up. I move my arm about 4 inches to hang it up. And I said, here comes the buck. And he was already at 30 yards. Because I mean, it's thick. There's laurel in there. And I wasn't paying attention because I was doing something else. I never heard him coming.
Yeah.
I look up, here it comes, it's 30 yards. And he closed it quick because he was jogging. So I had to make a decision like right now. And I tell you what, I almost passed that deer because I was looking for the big one that I was hunting. And yeah. I said, there's a buck. There's a shooter. He's a dark body, big deer. I'm like, am I going to shoot him? I don't know. I draw my bow back. And he comes to 10 yards. I'm like, meh. And he stopped. I'm like, am I going to shoot? Am I going to shoot? Within long season, wham, done. I guess that was it.
Yeah. Oh no, I was so pumped when you sent me that picture and that it worked out. And that's like the perfect example of like how we were just texting, you know, days before that, and you're kind of struggling and going through just a long season and just like, you know, wanting to catch a break with it. And right there, it was like a matter of 5 seconds changed your whole season to like, man, this year is a good one, you know, versus it's been a struggle. And
that's how it goes,
you know. It seems like year in and year out, it last year was one of the toughest seasons I had ever had, and in a matter of seconds that all changed, and I shot a nice buck on the last day that I had to hunt. And it was like that to me is like, I always keep that in my mind. And Johnny's really good with the mindset thing of it. You know, he always says like every minute that you don't shoot a buck, you're 1 minute closer to when you're going to shoot your next one. And it's like, it's true. Like that stuff can happen really at any time. And you just got to keep running the playbook and keep doing it and have fun with it and see kind of what happens. But
yeah, definitely. It's crazy too, how like, season to season varies so much. Like 2021, when I shot my biggest deer, I put 70 sits in on just that deer before I killed that one. And dude, by the end of it, man, I was hoping somebody else would kill it so it was over with, because that deer drove me nuts. I mean, it drove me clear out of my mind. And then the following season, last year, I put like an eighth of the effort into Pennsylvania that I usually do. Like I did not do much. Like I was just so focused on Ohio. 3 sits and I killed my buck. Biggest buck I have a caliber all year. I killed him 3 sits. And then this year, here we are. I was 66 sits in a tree. So it's crazy how much, you know, how it varies.
Yeah, it definitely can. Like this year it's funny because it's the opposite from the standpoint of I've had the absolute best season that I've had in a long time as far as encounters and sign and just like and just everything about it's been great. But yet I'm still, like I said, I haven't drawn my bow back yet. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this, and then I, you know, I start playing these games in my head, like, all right, what, well, is this all going to end and is everything going to dry up and then I'm really going to be struggling, or like, you know, I gotta make it happen. And you start playing these things and these things go through your head to be able to, it just messes with you. And when you talk to anybody that's like pretty serious about hunting, it seems like all of us go through these different mental standpoints of it. You know, I was talking to Johnny, we were in the woods together today and we were walking out and he was just like something about like, man, I felt so good in early October and I was seeing bucks and then all of a sudden the entire spot, you know, dried up and he was like, I'm, you know, going to these other areas and moving. He's like, everything's just changes so fast and you know, you could be doing really good and then all of a sudden it's dry and then it can be good again. And it's just, that's kind of the nature of it. And I think I feel like you really need to love that process and love that roller coaster and be almost a little bit glutton for punishment on it to really be able to enjoy it, to take it to the level that we like to and get really serious about bow hunting whitetails.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you look at things too. Like, there's always a positive to every situation. And I have not, like, it's been a slow season and I've mentally struggled a little bit, but it wasn't because my hunts were bad. I've had opportunities already multiple times. It was just my shooting ability is all it was. It wasn't that I was doing anything wrong or doing anything wrong. You know, my setups were good. I was where I needed to be at. My access was good. All the details were pretty fine tuned for me this year, I felt. It was just my shooting. You know, the opening day in Maryland, I see a poking young deer and another good deer behind it. And 2 days later, I had an opportunity at a good 8-point, and I just made a bad shot, hit that deer through the back straps. I think I've seen a couple other bucks since then. And then I had another opportunity in Maryland, had a buck come in 15 yards, works great, and shot him low in the shoulder. It's like right there where the heart is, like his leg was back a little bit. And I guess I just need to pay more attention to where I'm putting an arrow out with the recurve compared to a compound. And I hit that leg low and I just never made it through. But it went in like 2 inches and just bounced right back out. And then I took that doe and then I had an opportunity, another doe. And I haven't seen many bucks in PA, but I mean, that just comes along with it. You know how it is, just the stuff that we hunt. Yeah. I'm not setting up where I'm going to see deer at. But I think the buck I shot was the second shooter I've seen in PA this year.
Yeah. No,
so I've had encounters and opportunities. You know what I mean? It's just had some shooting stuff going on.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, as when this podcast comes out here in, you know, mid-November, there's going to be guys and girls that have tags still in their pocket and feeling like they're struggling. And I always go back to, it's just like the same thing that Johnny says, like, it can happen. You're 1 minute closer to it happening. It's just like trying to stay positive, trying to look at the good and things, like you were saying, like all the experiences and going through it, and just keep doing the thing when you have the time available to be able to do it and put forth the work. But there's no shortcut to hunting deer and the places that are the big woods and everything. Like, it's going to be hard, and that's just the nature of it. And I think you need to have a positive attitude and be able to stay up on it, or otherwise you just drive yourself absolutely nuts.
Yep. No, I agree. It's super good to have buddies around too that are uplifting, you know, me and you talking, and then having like Nathan, Ryan, and Jason, and Dalton, and all those guys to like, you know, send a text to, and you know, everybody's going to have a positive feedback to give you.
Yeah. No, yeah, surround yourself with good people. That if you have people that are always negative around you and having that, that's, it's going to bleed into you no matter what. And I'm super thankful that I've got a good circle of people that, that I can bounce things off of and feel like, you know, they're shooting me straight. They're not, you know, filling my head with BS just to make me feel better. But at the same time, you know, they're able to look at it from not being emotionally attached and be able to give you clear, you know, guidance on it. And like, normally what it comes to me is like, if I'm struggling and I call my dad or I call Johnny or I call you or I call somebody, it's like, all right, trust your process, Bo. Like, you put in the work, you know where good spots are. Now go run the playbook and go do it and just, and it'll work out. And if it doesn't, figure out why it didn't and get better next time. And that's yep. the ever, it's something where I always look at it as like, I'm always trying to chase excellence, even though that's not, or perfection, even though that's not possible. You'll never be perfect, but I feel like when you have that as your goal, you just keep, you know, getting better and trying to work at it. At least that's how I look at it.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, even my dad gave me like a wake up call that I didn't even know that I needed at one point. You know, we was in the truck together one morning. I said, "Man, you know, season's been slow." And he goes, "Well, you gotta look at it this way." And he said, "You're hunting big mountain ground." He said, "You're hunting you know, low deer density, hunting with a recurve, and you're hunting a certain type of deer." I'm like, "Yeah. Yeah, you're right." I guess you've got a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And then I'm also reminded too, like when I go to my family camp and, you know, I talk to my grandfather and I talk to people about like just enjoying this, just the traditions of hunting and just really enjoying that process of being out there and how lucky we are to be able to do that and be able to put the time towards it and have a passion. You know, I always look at it from the standpoint of people that don't have passions like this. Like, I don't understand people that don't hunt. I know that
weirdos.
That's the process. Yeah. Weirdos. But I really like, I'm thankful that I have something I'm so passionate about and work towards. And just like, I'm always thinking about it. And I think that's awesome to be able to do. So
you are not the only one, buddy.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of us out there that are like that. And I'm glad I got to meet a bunch of them through the podcast and everything else. And to be able to meet all those people and it helps me 100% just, be surrounded with those types of people. And I urge anybody to be able to do that. And I think that that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about the deer camp tradition, because that's where you get a lot of that camaraderie too, of like, mm-hmm. if you can get like-minded people, whether it's your family or your friends or anything, to be able to get together and be able to bond with all those people that are, have that similar mindset. It just makes it so much better. It's like, you know, hunting whitetails in the mountains for the most part is a pretty much a solo endeavor. But when you can bring other people into it, not necessarily, doesn't have to be on the hunt itself, but just in the conversations and talking about it, for me personally, it helps a ton.
Yep. And there's always like with the tradition, I don't know if you and your dad have like things that you do specifically that makes you or like reminds you that it's hunting season, or like little things that you always do. So my dad had always told me stories about him and my pap. You know, they would be sitting out watching a field edge and be like drinking coffee and eating the Hershey Kisses and stuff. So growing up all the time, I'm sitting with dad, we're always eating Hershey Kisses and drinking coffee together. Well, now when I'm by myself, like a big thing for me, I don't know what it is. Like, I drink coffee no matter what, like if it's cold outside. But if I'm just sitting in the tree stand, and I got a thermos of coffee and I'm sipping on coffee when it's like really cold out and there's like a beautiful sunrise. Dude, that's just like, that just reminds me that's hunting season. Like, it's just part of it for me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And you know, as I was saying, like Johnny and I were talking about today, it's like you almost wish you could just pause some of the stuff because it happens so fast and hunting season flies by, even though it may feel like a long season, but before you know it, it's going to be winter and it's going to be just, you know, cold and stuck inside a lot more. And
yes,
try and enjoy every moment that you can out there and being thankful for that. So I'm looking forward to just continuing to grind it and be out there and also, you know, as I say, grinding it, but also enjoying the process and trying to learn from every experience that I have out there.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Cause as soon as the snow gets too deep, I'm going to be a grumpy old man.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait till after hunting season and I remember that, like, oh, I didn't get enough coal for my stove in the wintertime and all these other things that are like life realities that I've been putting off because it's hunting season. So that's I'll keep pushing those down the road for this point and worry about them later. Like my cousin Mason always says, he's like present Mason doesn't think about future Mason and when it comes to like problems like that, and then you just deal with it when it comes
take
up.
Take care of it when it arrives.
Yeah. But anyways,
for the October leaf change, and then you hate it when it comes to January.
Yep, that's exactly right. But buddy, I want to be respectful of your time, get some sleep tonight so you can get out and get hunting in the morning, and I'm going to do the same thing here. So I appreciate you coming on and being able to talk. I urge everybody to, if you are on social media, follow Chris Unleash the Weast on Instagram. Is there anywhere else that you want to direct anybody?
No, that's pretty it for now. Eventually one of these days I might start a YouTube channel. Thinking about that, I'm getting some clips made up, so that might be a thing in the future.
Awesome. Well, for now, check him out over there, and yeah, you'll get to see all the work he's putting in from a hunting perspective, from the lifting perspective and everything else, and man, I appreciate everything that you know, getting to know you over the last year and you know, being another person I can bounce things off of and feel like I'm not as crazy as I feel sometimes.
Absolutely, man. Yep.
All right. Well, thanks, buddy.
You got it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.